Welcome to Pot of Gold. I am Fernando Ramirez. He's Mike Berardino. Together, we cover all things Notre Dame football for the South Bend Tribune and NDInsider.com. We thank you for joining us today. And before I get to Mike, we have another great podcast guest planned. A very special guest, former Notre Dame and Michigan recruiting coordinator and now the VP of football operations for Dark Horse Sports Recruiting, Bob Kamel. Thank you for joining the podcast. How are you doing today?
Doing real well, real well. I appreciate you guys having me on. All good things Notre Dame, always.
and Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Fernando. Yeah, I'm excited to have Coach on here as well. We met the other day at Adam Shibley's tough free clinic out there, and Coach and I talked about how much admiration he had for what happened out there. And I said, hey, let's come on the podcast. We got a lot more to talk about.
And Coach, just getting started with that, what did you think about the Tough football camp? And obviously Mike said it was a dollar donation for kids to come out and get tips from Isaiah Foskey, get tips from Michael Mayer, from so many different Notre Dame players. Just what was your takeaway from that camp?
Well, what happened was I do sports marketing for South Bend Orthopedics, which is the doctors at Notre Dame. And Dr. Radigan called me, who is one of the team doctors, also played at Notre Dame and briefly for the Colts, and asked me the Tuesday before if I would get involved. And I said, absolutely. And to be very honest with you, I was overwhelmed. Adam Shipley just did a phenomenal job. And Adam Shipley and I spoke before that. And I said he and I were the first two portal guys because he was at Michigan for 4 years. And I was at Michigan for 9 years and 10 years, actually. And then we ended up both coming here. So we have something in common. I couldn't believe the organization. He is so enthusiastic. And Mike would tell you he was everywhere. But one of the things that really impressed me was I've been to a myriad of events like this. A lot of times players will come, whether they're college athletes or whether professional athletes, sign a few autographs and leave. And that wasn't the case. The Notre Dame football players that came, and Mike, I think you'd agree with me, they were totally invested. They coached from when the thing started until the event ended. It was nonstop. I was so proud of them, and I mentioned this to Mike as I was leaving. I'm always proud of Notre Dame football players, but that they really enhanced my pride. A Saturday afternoon during a downtime, and probably 20 of them showed up and spent so much time with the kids. But the one, Fernando and Mike, the one picture that stayed in my mind, if you will, I was down at the end of the field, and one of the young guys was struggling. And, he was having, he was really a young, and Mike would say, there were a lot of really young kids there. And one of our players, and I wish I would have got his name right away, he came down to a knee, so he would have eye contact with this young man and just looked him in the eye and embraced him, and everything is going to be okay. You're going to do a great job and this and that. And all of a sudden the kid kind of perked up. They gave a fist bump and the young guy was on his way. But I thought, what a memory for these kids. What a memory for that young guy. And I mean, when I saw one of our guys take a knee and get face to face with that young kid, it almost brought a tear to my eye. It was beautiful. It was a wonderful event. And I think we had like over, I think there were over 200 young men that
200. Were. 200, absolutely. Yep. And about 31 Notre Dame active players, Coach. So pretty amazing stuff. You mentioned the Michigan connection you have with Adam. And of course, we were talking recently, Notre Dame fans very excited about the recent commitment of CJ Carr, a five-star quarterback, going into his junior year at just outside of Ann Arbor. And that's Lloyd Carr's grandson. You were on the same staff as Lloyd Carr, know Lloyd Carr very well. You would have known Jason Carr, I believe, CJ's dad. What was your reaction to that, that a Michigan man would end up sending his grandson, seeing his grandson commit to Notre Dame when Michigan definitely wanted him? And what was it like, that visual of seeing Lloyd with a Notre Dame hat?
A bit of irony. I would have to say that young Carr's grandfather wasn't the biggest Notre Dame fan that I knew. But it's a credit to Lloyd Carr, and it's a credit to Jason, who was a quarterback at Michigan, to let young Carr make this decision and do what he thought was best for him and do send him to a school where he would be comfortable. And I think it's a win-win. I think it's a win for the young man. I think it's a win for the University of Notre Dame. And I say this for a lot of reasons. If it was a different position, maybe a place where there's two guards, two tackles, on and on, multiple players at a position, I think it would have been a different deal. But I think for Carr to come here, I think it was a great decision for him. It was a great family decision, because I think it could really have gotten complicated, so to speak, as time moved on. So I'm happy for the young man. I'm happy for his family. And I'm certainly happy for the University of Notre Dame.
What about the dynamic coach of, having been a recruiting coordinator at both of those schools, going, playing that card for a guy who's a 2024 class member? CJ is making it clear he's not going to reclassify and move up into the class of 23 recruiting wise. And Dante Moore, right down the road in Detroit, also a five-star, also very much on Notre Dame's radar. And the national prognosticators all along had been saying, well, Notre Dame is in the driver's seat. Maybe not so much now. Notre Dame had almost its they went with they played the card that they could play first. We don't know how they truly feel about those two guys, but it's got to be hard to imagine that both will end up at Notre Dame. Or do you think that still might happen?
Well, as I watch this young man from Detroit, he seems to be doing a bit of traveling, if you will.
Yes.
And so I really don't know where he's at with everything, and I don't know where his mindset is right now. But regardless of where he goes, there's going to be competition. And I think that especially at the quarterback position, wherever you go, there's going to be competition. And if he shies away from the competition, or if he enhances the competition, that's going to be all, kind of be all up to him. So where he's at right now with his mindset, I don't know. But I do know he was down at Texas A&M. And I think he was out west also at Oregon, was it?
That's right.
And so, I don't know where that whole deal is going. I will say this. I'm glad somebody else is doing this right now, because it has changed radically. Just radically. But, we'll see. Time will tell.
You're listening to the Pot of Gold. We have former Notre Dame and Michigan recruit coordinator Bob Kamel on the show. Bob, it seems like you have taken a glance at my notes, because that's what I was going to ask you next. How do you feel like the recruiting game has really changed in the last 20, 30 years? How do you feel like it's changed?
I can answer that question with this fact. When I was the recruiting coordinator at Notre Dame, I had a secretary. Her name was Kay Harrity, hardest working person maybe in the department, and I had two student helpers. So that's how things have changed. I mean, when you think about social media and the size of the departments right now, and then, when I still have friends that are in the business, Dave Poloquin at Notre Dame is a great friend. I love David. I talk to David from time to time, and he's not actually as involved in the recruiting process as he was before, but we talk about a myriad of things. He's a total class act. I mean, when you take the portal and you take NIL and all these other things, you have to have staffs that are this size. Some of these recruiting offices have, up to 30 people, but the management of that, managing a recruiting board at one time was a lot simpler than it is right now. I mean, because of the portal, how many spots did we save for the portal? I don't know how invested Notre Dame is going to get in the portal, but even at the same time, it's monumental. It's overwhelming. And also the time that the NCAA permits coaches to be out on the road now, they've shortened the time of the dead period and all that. It's totally, totally different. And a lot of it comes down to technology and to social media.
Bob, it feels, just real quick, it feels like times have even changed. I mean, I feel like there used to be dead periods in sports, and now it just feels like everything's 24/7. Does it feel like that with recruiting? I mean, 24/7, 365, it feels like there's never a downtime for coaches. It feel and recruits, it feels like they're always on the move.
Well, that's, you know, basically my point, Fernando. I don't know. I mean, when is the downtime for coaches? They are always gone. They are always on the road. And that has really, really changed radically from the days when I was a recruiting coordinator.
What about, we're talking with Bob Kamel, the former recruiting coordinator at Michigan and Notre Dame, a man who's worked for the likes of Bo Schembechler, Lou Holtz, Lee Corso, Bob Davey, so many great stories, so much perspective, and we're right. What's that?
Stop right after Lou Holtz.
That's right. That's all right. This idea that Marcus Freeman has said right from his introductory press conference that he would be the lead recruiter on every player, that your head coach would be the lead recruiter. That's so foreign to me, because you always think of the coach being the head coach is the closer. You save him for last. I can only, you know, Marcus must have cloned himself by now. He's 36 years old, ton of energy, but he seems to be taking that to heart. What are your concerns as we talk about the hours these guys put in across the staff, but when your head coach, with all the additional responsibilities, the booster conversation and maintenance, the faculty interaction, the media responsibilities, that Marcus Freeman would be expected to answer a recruit's text, some 16-year-old, 15-year-old text, to make sure that he's engaging with that kid. It just strikes me as a recipe for burnout. I would be concerned about that. What do you think?
Mike, I can answer that by saying this. The day that I had the honor, and I say the honor, and I don't say that lightly, to come to Notre Dame and be called a Notre Dame football coach. When I walked into Coach Olson's office and we had our first meeting, and one of the things I told him was this: the pack travels at the speed of the lead wolf. And when the head coach sets a certain standard, everybody has to fall in with that standard, because he is the lead wolf. And if you're going to travel with that pack and he's leading the pack and the pack's going quick, you better go along with him, or you're going to find yourself doing something else someplace. So my hat is off to him that he, and I'm not surprised when I think of his background and what he's done, and for him to be as engaged as he is really sends a message out to the Notre, not only to his assistant coaches, but the Notre Dame community at large, that how important the recruiting process is. So, and he has a lot of energy, obviously. I only know him to one time to shake hands with him, but having watched, still being in South Bend, watching everything that he's doing, it's highly impressive.
It's funny that Mike says that he clones himself, because he is all over the place. But what are your expectations of this year's Notre Dame team now? Brian Kelly's gone after being here for so many years. Now it's the Marcus Freeman show. What are some of your expectations for this year's team?
I think it'll be an improved football team. And Fernando, I take it a step farther. Everybody's talking about the Ohio State game. How is that game going to be? Is it going to be an awakening, you know, as to where we're at as a football team and everything like that? But, you know, I think the one thing we have to consider is this, okay? First of all, the head coach at Ohio State, help me out here, guys.
Ryan Day.
I was glancing at my notes. Ryan Day has been there for like 4 years.
Yeah.
This is Marcus Freeman's first game. They're going into the horseshoe. Ryan Day is, I think, 34-4 at the present time. This game will not define Marcus Freeman. It will not define the entire season whatsoever. And I think when people right now are putting such an emphasis on this, I disagree with that. What I would like to see from in that game is this: that the game is a well-managed game. There's few penalties. It's well-coached offensively, well-coached defensively, and we have good special teams. We come out of that game being able to answer those questions, communication and everything like that. When the game's over, let the cards fall where they may, then we go to the next game. But please, Notre Dame people, do not judge Marcus Freeman and his time at Notre Dame by this first game at Ohio State. We want to be sound. We want to have good communication. We want to have good calls. We want to have good special teams. And to go into that environment, hostile environment, your first game, and then, you know, you get the other factor, the fact that Marcus was an outstanding athlete at Ohio State University. There, you know, there's a lot of subplots going in there. But by far, this will not define Marcus Freeman as a football coach at Notre Dame, or not define where this football program is going.
I wanted to ask Coach, it's an excellent point. And also there's Clemson on that schedule. There's the USC game at the end. There's plenty of work to be done beyond that. And of course, Ohio State just doesn't lose at home very often. Now, Notre Dame's going to be a 2-touchdown underdog, it would appear, going in. So kind of gravy if they can come away with the upset. But when they come back home, Notre Dame, and Marcus Freeman did coach the Fiesta Bowl, but he's never been the head coach for a home game. And one of the first changes he made and announced this spring is the return of Mass at the Basilica before the game on game day. And that Marshall home game on Saturday, September 10th, is going to include that dynamic. Seems very popular among program followers, among the former players I talked to before the blue-gold game. They all like the idea. You would have experienced that sort of thing, right? That goes back to the Coach Holt's days. What do you remember about that as part of the itinerary on game day? Are there any concerns about it being almost too emotional, or is it only a positive?
Mike, I will tell you, I think it was one of the most ridiculous decisions in the Kelly era was to eliminate Mass on game day. I have no idea why he did it. Walking from the Goog and walking to the library and then coming down to the stadium is nothing like the experience of walking out of the Basilica and walking to Mass. I why he did that, I don't know. It's not a distraction. It was not a distraction for national championship teams, was it? And I can answer this question with this. I doubt, and all these teams have a walk before a game and everything like that. There's nothing like this in college football, absolutely nothing. And, you know, some people had an opinion of Jim Coletto as a football coach, and those were difficult times under Davey. We could do a whole show about that. But Jim Coletto and I were friends before he came to Notre Dame. Jim is a great man. He's a good football coach. The guys that played for him loved him. They love him till this day. They still ask me about him. I felt his hands were tied when he came here. What I'm trying to say is this. He asked me, he said, how is that going to be going from the Basilica to church that day? And I said, Jim, I can't describe it to you. You'll have to experience it. Now, here's a veteran coach. Jim didn't come here as a GA. Jim had been a veteran coach. We start walking together side by side from the Basilica. And as we approach the stadium, I look at Jim and there are tears rolling down his face. And again, this is a guy who's been around. And we got into the stadium and I looked at him and he said, Bob, I don't even know what to say. Why we got away from that is completely beyond me. There are just certain things you don't mess with when you come here to coach. And that was the thing that should not have been messed with, in my opinion.
Talking with Bob Kamel, who knows the ins and outs of college football at every level, position coach, defensive coach, offensive coach, recruiting coordinator. And how about that recruiting piece, Coach, as a recruit who's welcomed in for the game day experience, only Notre Dame offering that aspect of pregame mass. And obviously not all players that Notre Dame's going to recruit are going to be Catholics. Many of them might not be religious at all, but seeing that level of intensity, of faith, of all the things that Notre Dame emphasizes, do you think that might tilt the table just a little bit for Notre Dame on those kids and getting some game day commitments?
Well, you mentioned some of the players are Catholic. Some of the players, are from multiple faiths. But it's not, how can I describe it? When you get inside there and you're together, and it's not in the basilica at large, behind the altar of the basilica, there's what they call Our Lady's Chapel. It is very intimate. You're side by side. It's close. It's tight. It's more than just a presence. It's a feeling. You feel it all around you. It's a time to come together. And then when it's over and you walk out into this beautiful campus, and as soon as you walk out, there's people everywhere. And then as you get closer, it gets tighter and the band is playing. And if I'm a young recruit and I have an opportunity to walk with the Notre Dame football team through that experience, I'm going to tell you, it could be a difference maker, regardless of what your faith is.
Coach, I didn't grow up in South Bend or around Notre Dame or any of that, but I just felt like when I took the job that there's something different about Notre Dame than there is about other universities, or there's something special about it, something unique. Can you put your finger on what that's like and what you remember when you first got to Notre Dame?
Well, you have to consider my background. I grew up in an ethnic neighborhood in Chicago. I grew up Catholic. I went to Fenwick High School, which is a huge feeder school to Notre Dame. One of my very first football coaches at Fenwick was John Lattner, who was a Heisman Trophy winner and an icon in Notre Dame football history. Now, I was not a guy destined to go to Fenwick. Fenwick guys were mostly from the suburbs. My dad had a restaurant and bar in Chicago. I took the subway to school, okay? But when I got to Fenwick and I started to sense, you know, kind of like what Mr. Lattner was all about, I was, a Notre Dame fan from – let me tell you another story, okay? Do you mind?
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Okay. You're the man.
So my dad had a bar in Chicago, okay? Well, on Sunday evening – there was a television show called Notre Dame Replay. There was no ESPN. There was no replay. There was, all the Notre Dame games were not on television at that time. And in the bar, in the very back of the bar, there was an area where there was a television where you could watch sporting stuff. And he would line up chairs there, okay? And I didn't hang out at the bar when I was a young kid, but no. Well, actually, I did. I tend to bar when I was 14 or 15 years old. My dad, what a way to grow up that way was. Me and Babe Ruth both grew up upstairs from our dad's bars. That's why I'm a Yankee fan, maybe. But I would sit there when the Notre Dame replay was on, and I was mesmerized. I couldn't wait. I was so excited. And then my dad had shut the jukebox off, and any of the customers that were there, we'd line up kind of like in the chairs and watch Notre Dame replay. And that's where my Notre Dame roots go back to, if you will. So coming to Notre Dame from my background, I always had this, this feeling about Notre Dame. And then when I became a high school coach at Fenwick, the freshman games were, started out as the freshman coach, were at 10 o'clock on Saturday morning. When those games are over, I got into my car, stayed with the speed limits, believe me, on the tollway. Got to Notre Dame without a ticket. Okay, no ticket. But you can always get a ticket if you get there. Somebody's going to sell you a ticket. To get there and watch Ara Parsegian coach and every book, Tom Pagna. I read all those books cover to cover. Well, life goes through many twists and turns. And my first college coaching opportunity came as a graduate assistant coach at the University of Michigan under Bo. But here, this is a couple of things that people don't understand. I got to come to Notre Dame because of Bo. I became very, very close to Bo. I was his graduate assistant coach before I came back as a full-time coach. He was like an older brother, a second dad to me. But he and Coach Holtz were very, very close. And when Bo retired, my life changed radically. And one day he called me in and, you know, we talked about this and everything. And he said, you know, Bob, Coach Holtz has been calling me about you for about the past 4 years. And I told him, as long as I'm head coach at Michigan, you are not going to Notre Dame. But now things have changed for you. I can see that. And I have my family is very ensconced into Michigan football tradition. I had two brother-in-laws that were all Americans at Michigan. My father-in-law, Don Dufak, was the MVP in the 1951 Rose Bowl. I loved him. Another Chicago guy. So, you know, I had a lot of Michigan in me. But Bo said, Bob, this would be what's best for you. I talked to my family about it. And the other thing was, my mom still lived in the same house that I grew up in. My dad was deceased. I had no brothers or sisters. My mom was getting on in her age. And that was the one thing Bo and I talked about, hour and 15 minutes from my mom, hour and 15 minutes from the neighborhood I grew up in. So coming here, but even with that being said, I remember one day at practice, like one of my very first days at practice, we were out on the practice field. It was a gorgeous fall day. And I was talking to Coach Holtz, and as I looked over his shoulder, I saw the dome against the most beautiful fall sky you can imagine. And I had to like almost pinch myself. What am I doing here? How did I get here? And it was overwhelming. It just was completely overwhelming. It was one of the greatest days of my life. One of the saddest days of my life when I was told was that I was no longer going to be on the Notre Dame football staff. And to be honest with you, I don't know if I've ever recovered from that day, from that standpoint.
How did that news get relayed to you?
Sometime we'll have to talk about that.
But it's still too painful.
Well, I cried my eyes out, and I'm not ashamed to say that. You know, I cried my eyes out. The one thing, it really didn't have to be. So, but anyway, we can talk about that another time.
Yeah. I don't know, how much you want to get into it, but everybody at that time around the program was kind of swept into a spotlight they didn't want with the Joe Moore lawsuit, the age discrimination lawsuit, and nobody came out of that feeling too good, or the university certainly took its hits in that period. Now there's a Joe Moore Award that Notre Dame linemen have won before as the best offensive line in the country and have a good chance to do so again now that Harry Hiestand is back. But what's the proper way to look back at that period almost a quarter century ago in terms of the hits that overall that did that have a ripple effect on the program that maybe took a full decade to recover from if you just look at the way things kind of went?
I would describe it as dysfunctional. If you ever speak to Harry Hiestand, Harry was one of Joe's most loyal and most revered people Joe was in Harry's life. When I would go to see Harry from time to time, the first thing we talked about was Joe. Make no mistake about it, Joe loved Notre Dame. He loved Notre Dame. What happened to him, was unfortunate. It was very unfortunate. I, till this day, it was hard for me to see the iconic Coach Lou Holtz walk out of that office and Bob Davey to walk in. And Bob Davey marked me early on as a Lou guy. And I was a Lou guy, and I'll always be a Lou guy.
Bob, just last thing from me. What's some advice that you would give to the kids, the athletes? I mean, what's maybe some advice that you gave at the Tough football camp to the next generation of young athletes?
As they come to camp now?
Yes. Or, yeah, like the next generation of young athletes and just what are some advice that you can give them?
I would give them the same advice that I would give to any new coaching hire. Never let a day go by, whether you're an incoming young man or whether you're a new assistant coach or a current coach. Never let a day go by that you don't understand and embrace the opportunity you have to coach or play in this football program. Not a day. Enjoy every single day. Respect every single day. Respect the people that have gone before you. And not one day say, hey, I'm blessed to be here at Notre Dame and be a player or be a coach.
Bob, I wanted to ask you, too, it's been 11 years since you did something incredibly courageous and meaningful, and I wonder if you can update us on it at all. But a man who also knew what it was like to work or to play at Michigan, to coach at Notre Dame, was Corwin Brown. And, you know, people listening may not remember, maybe they remember it well, but my read on it from looking back at those stories is you contributed to defusing a very dangerous situation and actually assisted the local police and you used a bullhorn, correct me if I'm wrong, to yell out to Corwin, be a Michigan man today, step up to your obligations. And basically you were a citizen and a friend and a mentor there. You never stopped coaching. Was that maybe one of the most meaningful and important moments of coaching that you ever did?
Mike, with all respect, that was improperly reported. I was not the guy on the bullhorn.
Oh.
No, that was a sports psychologist that had driven all the way from Ann Arbor.
Oh.
But I was there. I was involved. My communication with Corwin, though, was not on that bullhorn. Corwin's father-in-law was Billy Harris, and he was our secondary coach at Michigan. And Corwin is married to Missy, who was Billy's daughter. I was actually golfing, and the county cops came and got me, and I went there, and it was sad. It was sad, and it was sad, and it was, I don't want to say out of the movies, but the area was cordoned off. There were police everywhere. There were snipers up in windows adjoining, and I put my arms around Missy, his wife, and Missy actually had babysat for our three daughters, Ann and I, our three daughters, and she was family. And Corwin, I was involved in recruiting Corwin out of Chicago. And it was hard. It was very, very hard for me. And the way it ended that way when he finally walked out, which I really don't want to even talk about. And we've stayed in touch since then. I can't say on a regular basis, but I will tell you, when I was driving home that day, I had to stop and pull alongside the road and gather myself up, because here was this young man that I had known from the time he was 17 years old. And I loved him, you know, and I say I have three daughters and I have thousands of sons. Corwin was one of my sons and, you know, another Chicago guy. We used to joke about that all the time, and to see what he went through and that on that day, it was hard. I mean, it was really hard. And I pray for Corwin all the time, and I pray for his family. Two of his daughters now are playing tennis at the University of Michigan, and Missy, his wife, is still involved in the tennis community here in South Bend, and maybe one of the most courageous people that I have ever met. She is just unbelievable. I mean, you talk about tough. She is just, I can't even put into words the respect and admiration I have for her. She's never wavered, not one single time.
Bob, Mike, do you have anything else for Bob? Or?
Oh, I have a million questions, but we've taken too much of his time and every every answer has been beautiful and memorable and just a pleasure to have him on, have Bob on. We'd hope to have him back. We'll have him back if he'll come on as we get into the season, because the perspective is priceless.
Well, if I can just say this, I never stopped rooting for Notre Dame. I've always loved Notre Dame, but I have not been to a game since the day I left. I watch all the games on television, root for Notre Dame, and Fernando and Mike, I've become the best tailgater. The game starts, I come home and put the TV on. I can tell you that I'm reborn. I'm going to talk to Ron Paulus. I'm going to try to get some tickets. I am going to Notre Dame football games, and I'm going to sit in the stands. And when Coach Freeman and Tommy Rees are there, I'm going to yell, throw the ball to the tight end, would you please?
Oh, they will. They will with that guy.
Look at that. Breaking news on Pot of Gold. Bob Kamel will be in attendance this year at a Notre Dame football game, and he'll be cheering on Michael Mayer.
I'm reborn because I believe in Marcus Freeman for a lot of reasons.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know. It seems like a lot of people are behind Marcus, former players, former coaches. It just seems like he's really done. He's really put his stamp on this program even before he really gets started. So that's good to see. But Bob, we appreciate you joining Pot of Gold. Thank you so much for jumping on with us. And like Mike said, you're welcome back anytime. We can't wait to have you during the season. We might have you the week after you go to your first Notre Dame game.
There you go. I like it.
Yeah, we'll definitely get your perspective. And hopefully Michael Mayer has 10 catches and 150 yards thanks to you.
Thank you. God bless you guys and go Irish.
Mike, I feel like every time we have a guest on, I learn so much more. And like I said, like I told Bob Kamel, I'm an outsider coming in, but I know that Notre Dame is a special program. It's a special university. And man, every time I hear more and more stories, every time we talk to more and more guests, I just feel like I learn so much more about what this program is all about.
Yeah, and I think anybody, we hope our listeners do as well. I mean, we're trying to find people with interesting perspectives and who have been right there on the ground floor, whether it's Jerome Bettis or Malik Zaire, Brandon Wimbush. It's been fun. We have a lot more to come here as we get through the summer months. But I thought with June being such a heavy time for recruiting CJ Carr commitment, it just made a lot of sense to have somebody who knows the ins and outs and has the war stories from the recruiting game as the coordinator at both Michigan and Notre Dame. So we thank Bob Kamel again for coming on. What have you been writing? I saw you had a story with the several former Notre Dame players out there in the California NFL teams, very high on Marcus Freeman.
Yeah. So I went to Rams camp. Last Monday I went to the Los Angeles Chargers had a golf tournament to help with to help raise money for Children's Hospital. And Drew Tranquil and Alohi Gilman were both there. A surprise that nobody who knows that they're both former Notre Dame players. And I talked to both of them. Both of them said, yeah, no, we're here to help, whatever we can do. And Tranquil and Alohi have always been those guys that whenever the Chargers need somebody to step up, those two guys are always willing to do whatever it takes for charity and help them out. And both of them just had glowing remarks about Marcus Freeman. And Drew said, he's like, I had his number from when he tried to recruit me at Purdue. He's like, and this is years and years ago. And I just thought maybe I'll text him and say, hey, congratulations. He didn't expect a text back. And he said he got a text back and that him and Marcus jumped on the phone and that they just reminisced and talked about old times and about how Marcus wants him to come out and help with some of the linebackers and Alohi, same thing. Alohi was there for the pro day and he said that he felt welcomed again. And then I went to Rams and I talked to Ben I can't say his name. Ben
Skoranek.
Sorry. Thanks for the assist. You're Magic Johnson. And I talked to Ben and he just said that Marcus came out to LA after they had won the Super Bowl and that he's like, hey, I'd love to have dinner. And he's like, I had dinner with Marcus and I was just blown away by the kind of guy that he was. And it was just it was good to get to talk to those former guys and see what their opinions are of Marcus. And hopefully all three of them said that they want to be guests on the Pod of Gold. So hopefully down the line we can get each of them on the pod and it'd be a good, they'd be all good guests because they're all very excited. They're all very knowledgeable about Notre Dame football.
Oh, those would be good gets. And it's we're counting on you, Fernando. We're counting on you to as our West Coast Bureau to complete this process and get them on the Pod of Gold. And you know, then we'll ask them everything we can think of. That'll be fun. Remember, you can subscribe to ndinsider.com for $4.99 a month. That gets you access to all of our stories that are subscriber only, our coverage of Notre Dame football and beyond. And of course, this baseball program is out at the College World Series, basketball coming up in a few months, anything, but especially what we focus on is the Notre Dame football program that, as Bob Kamel reminded you, no matter what happens at Ohio State, it's got a lot to look forward to, and we'll always be relevant, always. So yeah, for $4.99 a month, the videos that we post there, our live chats that I do, these podcasts, and we invite you also to follow us on Twitter at Mike Berardino. And what's your Twitter handle, Fernando?
I'm at Real F Ramirez. So yeah, definitely some good stuff coming up, especially as this is known kind of as the quiet period in a sense, but it's going to start picking up pretty soon. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to have a lot of good stuff coming up pretty soon. So he's Mike Berardino. I'm Fernando Ramirez. Thank you so much again for checking out Pod of Gold. Again, we're going to have some good stuff coming up. Thank you guys so much for checking it out. And like Mike said, ndinsider.com, $4.99. That's a lot cheaper than Netflix, cheaper than a lot of the streaming services out there. So don't forget to check out our stuff and have a great rest of your guys' week. And we appreciate you checking out the Pod of Gold.